Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a weekly program empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And as you all know, we are now approaching and have entered Breast Cancer Awareness Month, but that's probably the last time I'm going to mention that phrase because I don't really like that title. I'm more focused on Breast Health Awareness Month. So to honor this month where we are looking at the issue of breast health, I have organized an amazing array of fantastic researchers, practitioners, the kind of knowledge that we need to empower us to understand how to optimize our health, the strategies we need to prevent chronic illnesses like breast cancer. And if you or someone you know or love may be dealing with a breast cancer episode, as I like to call it, then we're going to be supporting them with strategies that will also give them more resources on their healing journey. To really get the best out of what I have put together for this month of breast health awareness, I encourage you, if you haven't already, to go to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, because I will be sending out throughout the month various video blogs I put together and strategies and practical tips. And I also recommend you go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know. Like me over there because I will have additional information that will go out on a daily basis. So really, this is a fantastic month to gain the kind of practical knowledge, practical solutions that will really allow us to stay on a healthy path. Also, what I put together is a special bonus for the entire month of October. I'm calling it my bosom buddy bonus, my bosom buddy bonus. And my bosom buddy bonus is the opportunity to get two free copies of my book called What Women Must Know to Protect Their Daughters from Breast Cancer. This is a book I wrote as a follow-up to my first best-selling book, Hormone Heresy, What Women Must Know About Their Hormones. And this book came out of the realization, actually it was rather shocking to have encountered as I traveled around on a lecture tour around the world, many, many young women who are being diagnosed with breast cancer, the 20 and 30-year-olds. So this was amazingly shocking to me. I really had no idea that breast cancer was now being diagnosed in such young women. And it was particularly disturbing because the younger the women are who are diagnosed with breast cancer, the more aggressive form of the disease they have, the worse the prognosis and the consequences to the traditional way of treating this cancer. So I wrote a book that was addressing the issues that are driving this condition that's showing up in young women, but actually the indications that something is really awry in young children from the very beginning, from the time they're still in the womb, and the action steps, practical strategies, what we need to do to really put our family, our children on a healing path. So I hope you'll take advantage of it. Here's the deal. To become a bosom buddy and to get the that's really a tongue twister, and to get the benefits, all you need to do is order anything off my store on What Women Must Know. If you order anything from my store, I will send you, as my way of supporting you and giving you really quality information, two copies of my book, What Women Must Know to Protect Their Daughters from Breast Cancer, one for you and one for your bosom buddy, so we can share this information. So take advantage of it. It's, it's actually a really big book. It's over 300 pages, lots of great information. I know you'll get great value from it, and you'll be able to support your friends and continue on your journey of getting empowered. We must get empowered with the knowledge now. So to kick off this amazing month of empowering information and strategies, I'm really thrilled to have as my guest today Dr. David Zava. A little bit about Dr. Zava. He has devoted his 40-year professional career to exploring the roles of hormones in aging and disease. After completing his PhD in biochemistry at the University of Tennessee in 1974, Dr. Zava spent much of his time doing basic research on hormones and breast cancer in Texas, Switzerland, California, and Oregon. In 1998, he established ZRT Laboratory, that is a front runner in the innovative development of test methods to identify hormonal imbalances that can lead to debilitating symptoms, diminishing quality of life, and increased risk of cancers and many of the diseases of aging, such as diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and senile dementia. ZRT Laboratory was one of the first laboratories to develop and commercialize non-invasive, which is saliva and dried urine, and semi-invasive dried blood spot methods for testing hormones as an alternative to conventional serum testing. Using these unique methods of body fluid collection, ZRT is actively engaged in hormone research studies with universities, government and military agencies, private physicians, and professional sport teams. In addition to his innovations in clinical laboratory testing and development and numerous scientific publications over the past 40 years, Dr. Zava co-authored a landmark book, What Your Doctors May Not Tell You About Breast Cancer, How Hormone Balance Can Help Save Your Life. And in his book, Dr. Zava and co-authors describe how breast cancer can be caused by hormonal imbalances that occur naturally as we age, but can be prevented if the types of hormonal imbalances are identified with testing and restored to optimal healthy levels with bioidentical hormone replacement therapy and improved lifestyle, which includes diet, exercise, and stress reduction. So we have a fantastic guest with us. I'm so excited, as always, to have an opportunity for this conversation with Dr. David Zava. So Dr. Zava, welcome to the show today.
Thank you very much, Dr. Salmon.
Well, we have had you in the past, and I'm always so delighted that you have made the time to come and again be a guest on the show, because you have such a wealth of information, not only out of your past of researching breast cancer as the author of such a profound book, but also your ongoing developments with your laboratory, with ZRT Labs, that actually are always creating new tests and really help us understand how best to assess what's going on. So I'd like us to start this conversation today by explaining, out of your experience, what you think are the greatest risk factors right now that put women in a compromised situation that could generate, you know, more serious health issues, more serious hormonal problems, and certainly breast cancer is one of them.
Well, in terms of risk factors, certainly what I was interested in doing is looking at the hormonal milieu, how that changes, and what happens to a woman who develops breast cancer. What's going on with their hormones? What has changed prior to her developing breast cancer? And so in order to do that, I had to develop tests, saliva tests and blood tests and urine tests, in order to get some answers to that. And, you know, what we see now in some of the tests that early on, the saliva test that I developed, is that, as a woman is moving into menopause, her risk of breast cancer goes up. So she's 45 to 50 years old. And if her hormones are out of balance at that point in time, she's ovulating, she's having menstrual cycles, but she's making plenty of estrogen and often too much. She's not making enough progesterone. That puts her at risk. So that's a good time to rebalance, to understand that the hormones are out of balance at that point in time. Estrogen is very life-giving, but estrogen also, I look at it like gasoline. You know, if it catches fire in the wrong place, it can be harmful. You know, there are 240 enzymes, 240 different pathways where estrogen is beneficial. It's beneficial for your brain. It's beneficial for your bones. It's beneficial for your skin. You know, people talk about pregnancy glow. Well, that's all about estrogen doing all of its positive things. But estrogen can go bad, and we talked, John Lee and I talked about this in the book that we wrote, and it can go bad by oxidizing. So, and it's like an oxidized fat. In fact, it's exactly like an oxidized fat. And if it oxidizes down wrong pathways, then it can form mutagens that can bind to DNA that can eventually cause a cancer. So my goal was to develop tests, not only to test do you have too much estrogen to begin with, but is that estrogen going down wrong pathways? So more recently, we've developed urine testing that allows us to look at the estrogen metabolites. And lo and behold, we did a study just recently with China and was able to show that those women who had an active disease, active breast cancer in their breasts that hadn't been surgically removed yet, had much higher levels of these bad estrogens in their urine versus a healthy group of control patients. So that's certainly just from the estrogen and progesterone perspective is very important. But there's lots of other things that are controlling how your body is making estrogen and how it's handling estrogen. I know you talk a lot about this in your books. You know, it has to do, can you, number one, lower the level of that estrogen that's being produced? Certainly exercise, eating a good diet, keeping stress levels low, keeping your weight right are ways of doing it. But there are also elements like iodine, like selenium. There are vitamins such as vitamin D that are very important for helping to regulate how that estrogen is being handled in the body. So you don't want to, it's just the same reason you don't want to be eating margarine and having that oxidizing in your body, because that's going to increase your risk for cardiovascular disease. The estrogen goes through similar oxidation pathways. And if you're not taking care of yourself, you're not eating right, you're not burning the fats out of your body, you know, for energy, you're going to be at increased risk. You're going to have more and more damage to the breast tissue. And the interesting thing that I've seen and also published in the literature, and that is that breast cancer is usually, not in every case, but most, it's usually preceded by about 2 years before the breast cancer shows up. There's some kind of a stress factor that you don't have control over. It could be divorce, could be loss of a loved one, could be financial disaster. Most women I talk to, I the first thing I'll ask them, if they're asking, you're talking to me about breast cancer, I'll say, what happened to you 2 years ago? And a lot of times, women will start crying because they knew, you know, exactly. I don't necessarily ask them, you know, tell me what that was, but it's definitely a stress factor that you don't have a lot of control over at that point in time. And that, I think everybody has small cancers in their body. And that's, I look at that stress factor as a triggering factor, because when we start looking at cortisol, and we start looking at DHEA, which is both are adrenal hormones, and now we're looking at melatonin, what we're seeing is that cortisol is going up and it tends to stay high at night, and that DHEA is going down to a very low level, and melatonin kind of flatlines. You don't have the natural circadian rhythms. Normally, when you go to bed and you hopefully sleep in the dark, your melatonin levels go up. And that does all sorts of beneficial things to your immune system. So that bathes your immune system and gets it working right. And then, with the adrenal hormones, they play an important role too. But if your adrenal cortisol is too high because you're perceiving stress in your life, all of that's going to have an impact on how your immune system works. And your immune system begins to falter. And so those microfoci of cancer have an opportunity to start growing. So those are the kinds of events. So it's, you know, you go back and say, well, what can you do? Well, you can measure your hormones if you think they're off, because you pretty much know. You know, woman will say, "Well, I've gained all this weight, you know, in my hips and in that, or other parts of my body. That's estrogen, and not enough progesterone. I've got a lot of stress in my life." So all these different things become more insulin resistant, and that's also related to, you know, cancer growth. So you go back and say, well, what can I do? You eat better, you exercise, you know, you do those things that help you relax. You definitely ought to be sleeping in a dark room. If you're not getting enough sun, you should be taking vitamin D. If you don't have enough iodine in your body or selenium in your body, you should be taking those nutrients, along with B vitamins and all sorts of other things. And we can test. Some people, they will make the bad estrogens, but they methylate them very rapidly. And they have a methylation defect. That just may be something genetically they're born with. So if it's that situation, we see, oh, look, the bad estrogens are being made, but they're not being detoxified fast enough, meaning they're not methylated properly. Then we want to be able to tell them, look, you know, you need to be doing things that are going to help you either reduce the burden of those estrogens that are turning into toxins, or help take things that are helping with the methylation pathway, which is usually B vitamins, B6, B12, betaine, things of that nature, that will increase the methylation. And part of that is related to many of the enzymes in the body that are antioxidants that are selenium dependent. One of the things that we saw in the women from China is that they have very low levels of selenium, extremely low levels. The average here we see in the United States is 50 units, and they were 20 and less, almost everyone, not only the breast cancer patients, but also the normal. And the problem there is that when we also look at other elements such as arsenic and mercury, as we saw really high levels. Now, everybody that's ever watched the news knows that you look at, you know, the sky in China and it's yellow. It's not the river anymore. It's not the yellow river. It's the yellow sky. And that's because they're burning coal. And coal creates a huge toxic waste pool of both arsenic as well as mercury. So that's a big problem. It's a problem in the United States also, in areas where they're fracking, because they're basically releasing a lot of these elements. Arsenic is natural in the crust of the earth, but it's not good if it gets in your water table, and so it's easy for that to increase in the water table, and they're finding that in some areas that the arsenic is going up. And arsenic binds like crazy to selenium and pulls it out. So it's not going to be going into these antioxidant enzymes that are protecting your body. So there's a whole lot of things. So I'm developing all these tests to try to get at, okay, what is the cause? And it's not just one thing. You know, we test insulin. We test progesterone. We test estrogens. We test estrogen metabolites. We test elements. They all play a role in the way estrogen, and we test thyroid. So they're all playing a role in terms of your risk for breast cancer. It's the DNA is going to get damaged to a certain extent, but it just has to get repaired. And the more repair you have going on, or the less damage you have going on, the less likely that a damaged cell is going to lead to a cancer at some point in time down the road.
So you just given us so much amazing information. I'm just going to break it down a little bit into bite-sized pieces so
sure.
We can go through some key things mm-hmm. that you touched on. And I just want to make sure my audience really understands some of these things. Let's go back and talk about oxidized estrogens, because this is an area that I actually have been researching a lot about, and in my own way very passionate in explaining to women. This is something I don't believe most people really understand, and yet it's such a major issue as one of those risk factors for breast cancer. I have learned about it because of the nutrigenomic testing that I've been doing, and I look at the genes that directly influence detoxification in the body, and I just see about 90% or more of people who I have tested have these impaired genes for detoxification of estrogens properly, so it can turn them into what you were calling these oxidized estrogens. Can you just elaborate a little bit more about what that is and why this is of such concern and why we really want to do an assessment, do the test that gives us this kind of information, especially if a woman is on the pill or bioidentical hormones or HRT or is overweight and therefore producing a lot of estrogens through that visceral fat?
Yeah, if she's making a lot of estrogen, then normally those estrogens are, they're naturally metabolized on different pathways, and there's really kind of three ways that we think of that the estrogens, three different pathways. There's more than that, but we'll just talk about the oxidized estrogens, and it could be either estradiol, which is E2, or estrone E1. Those are the two that potentially get oxidized down either good pathways or bad pathways. And really the good pathway is considered to be a 2-hydroxy estrogen. Now that can further get oxidized. It's called a catechol estrogen. Basically, you're just adding oxygen molecules. You're oxidizing. And that's the process of getting rid of the estrogen. But it's kind of the intermediate stages of that process that can be dangerous if there's not enough things there to capture those oxidized forms of estrogen. So when you eat cruciferous vegetables and things like that, you push both estrone and estradiol down the 2-hydroxy, which is considered the safe pathway, and that'll it potentially can bind DNA, but it's not mutagenic. It gets repaired. The bad pathway is the 4-hydroxy estrogen pathway. Now that's a pathway that's induced by an enzyme called CYP1B1. Now that is just a type of an enzyme. But the interesting thing about that enzyme is that a lot of pollutants in the environment induce that enzyme. So if you're exposed a lot to different kinds of, pesticides and polycyclic, types of compounds in the environment, you're probably going to have more of that enzyme. So it's going to take the good estrogens that are healthy for you, and they're going to metabolize them down a bad pathway. So that's probably where pollution, because a lot of these pollutants, they collect, and breast tissue is very fatty. And so these are fat-loving types of molecules they collect in the fat. And the mammary epithelium are embedded in that fat tissue of the breast. So there's just this enormous exposure, if you've been around pesticides or just different kinds
or bisphenol
of
bisphenol A from
your
water
bottle.
Yeah, absolutely.
All that stuff. It's really aromatic kind of molecules. They're fat-loving. So they end up, and they have real long half-life, so they collect in the breast tissue. And I wrote an article about it in Environmental Health Perspectives back so many years ago, I can't remember what it was, but about that, and they do collect. So those push that, they kind of, push the button on that, on the synthesis of that enzyme that makes the 4-hydroxy estrogens. And those, if you don't have enough what we call catechol or orthomethyltransferase and acetylsalicylamine, which doesn't mean anything to anybody listening, but these are just things that that bad estrogen is being made, and those are things that just sort of stuff into the mouth of the bad estrogen, and they say, okay, you can't go any further. We've detoxed you, you've been inactivated. So those are things that require B vitamins. So there's where B vitamins play an important role. Also, glutathione or the sulfur groups that in the foods that you eat are important for detoxing those estrogens. But if you if you're making too many of them and they're not detoxed, then they can bind to DNA, they cause mutations, and eventually that can lead to a cancer. And that's the problem.
So the take-home message really for people listening to what we've been talking about is, first of all, you want to be eating you want to reduce exposure as much as possible.
Right.
It's really important. I think
reduce exposure
really
to pollutants, for sure.
Yeah, to pollutants as much as possible. So that's number one. Number two, we want to have our diet filled with cruciferous vegetables because cruciferous vegetables have active ingredients that support the proper pathways to deactivate estrogens and safely get them removed.
Some people take extracts of those. You know, they take like indole-3-carbinol or dienylmethane. Those are extracts of cruciferous vegetables. So those will push things down the two. You know, if you don't like broccoli, then you might want to be. If you make too many of the bad estrogens, you might want to think about that. But iodine also pushes down that pathway more than it does the 4-hydroxy. So
yeah, we'll talk about iodine in a little bit.
Okay, sure.
Because these are all key pieces. I want to say that I have just done an interview with a researcher, a biochemist out of Australia, who has patented a broccoli seed extract product that I recommend and use now. That's called Enduracell, and it's on my website. That has been demonstrated to be 50 times better than DIM and I3C. So this is what I'm recommending for everyone to be taking, including myself, because I think this is one of those nutrients that has such a profound effect on supporting our health and for everyone, because we're all exposed. And it helps to move that estrogen and help to be metabolized down the safe pathway. And the interesting thing that I've learned is that all this detoxification is actually going on in the breast tissue itself, right? This is happening in the breast tissue, not in the liver. In the breast, these enzymes are actually generated in the breast tissue, which is why it's such a focus for DNA damage to occur. So,
Once all that occurs, they're being released into the bloodstream, they end up in urine, and that's where we measure them, because we can't take biopsies of breast tissue to look
at
these things.
So the
correlation is very good, what we see in urine and what's happening in the breast tissue.
So let's talk about the test you've developed, but before we do that, just two little seconds to mention that while we're talking about breast cancer, but this process is also going on in men, not only increasing in that small population of men who are vulnerable to breast cancer, but it's more prostate cancer, which also follows the same pathways because the prostate is an estrogen-sensitive organ, which many people do not understand. So this is relevant information for men.
Yeah, everything I said about what was going on in women is true for men and their prostate, because it's a very similar disease and caused by bad metabolism of estrogens down wrong pathways. So
right. So, okay, so we've been talking about this estrogen metabolism issue, how we want to ensure that we have the proper enzymes in place to deactivate, so to speak, estrogens, make them benign so they can be taken out rather than turn them into something even more dangerous and potentially damaging the DNA leading to breast cancer path. Talk about the test you developed to assess what's going on.
Yeah, the test that we developed is, I like simple. So rather than, the people develop urine tests for this, and you have to pee in a jug over a 24-hour period, so it's kind of cumbersome and difficult to carry this urine jug around with you. So we developed an assay that allows you to capture urine four times during the day. So when you first wake up in the morning, you basically pee on a filter strip and hang it up to dry. Your second urine void, you do the same thing four times during the day. The advantage of that, so we combine the four to look at all of the good or bad estrogens that are present. But we look at a lot of other hormones. The advantage of that is that it's a lot easier to collect the specimen, because you know, anybody that urinates will be able to collect the specimen, because all you got to do is urinate on this filter strip and then hang it up to dry, then ship it in a dried form, as opposed to you're just dealing with this great big jug of urine. The other advantage of doing it this way is it allows us to look at the diurnal pattern, because we're now looking at cortisol four times throughout the day, so we see the pattern of cortisol. We see if it's too high at night. We've also developed a test for melatonin now, so we're looking at melatonin. And breast cancer patients tend to have, and prostate cancer patients, tend to not produce very much melatonin. So we can, and we're looking at the circadian pattern. It should be, melatonin should be high at night, should be low during the day. Cortisol should be high in the morning and low at night. And those tend to flip in cancer patients. So that's one of the things that we notice.
Are these all-in-one tests, Dr. Zava, or are these separate tests?
They can be an all-in-one test. I mean, we have options for people. People can look, just at the, an estrogen metabolite profile, but we have a comprehensive. For a cancer patient, I much prefer that they look at a comprehensive profile, because really you're looking at the parent estrogens, estradiol, estrone, estriol. You're looking at the hydroxyestrogens, the catechol estrogens, which is the 2, 4, 16, and then you're looking at whether or not those hydroxyestrogens are methylated. And then we go to the progesterone, and we look at progesterone metabolites, and then we go to androgens, and we look at things like testosterone, dihydrotestosterone, DHEA, androstenedione, and then we go to the glucocorticoids, and we look at cortisol and cortisone, and then we also look at melatonin. And we do urinary free cortisol and melatonin in four separate tests, because we want to be able to capture what's happening to the circadian pattern. As I said, cortisol should be high at night, cortisol should be low at night, melatonin should be high at night. So we can see that pattern, and we can feed back information and say, your pattern is flipped, so you need to maybe take melatonin. Women with breast cancer tend to have a calcified pineal gland, and that may be caused by excessive levels of stress throughout their life, but they definitely have a lower level. And the literature, and I've done a webinar on melatonin and its relationship to breast cancer, and definitely plays a role in prevention of breast cancer. So
I'm going to just take a moment. We need to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more about some of the tests you have developed that allow us to get clues to stay on top of the biochemical changes and the hormonal changes going on, so we can truly be proactive, preventative, or know where our strategies need to be to support our health. So great conversation, everyone. Stay tuned. We are having this important conversation to kick off our Breast Health Awareness Month series with Dr. David Zava. And you are listening to What Women Must Know. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. We will be right back. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and today we are talking with Dr. David Zava. He is the co-author, along with Dr. John Lee, What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Breast Cancer, How Hormone Balance Can Help Save Your Life. He is also the founder of ZRT Laboratory, which is a front runner in the innovative development of test methods to identify hormonal imbalances that can lead to debilitating symptoms and increase the risk of cancer. So, Dr. Zava, I just want to go back to that estrogen metabolism test really quickly. So this is a test you recommend, and we'll talk about the other tests that you've mentioned before, that looks at how well the metabolism of estrogen is going on, so we know for sure that we're taking our estrogens in whatever form it comes into our body and turning them into safe forms and excreting them rather than more dangerous DNA-damaging ones. I like to see this test for women who either are on some form of hormones and that may have a risk of breast cancer, or, as I said, if I see that they have their genomic test reveal that they have this inherited problem, this impaired ability to use that test, because it's a great way to monitor. That to me is one of important preventative approaches, so we can stay on top of things. Do you concur with that?
Oh, I do. Yeah. And the genetic test will tell you about where your genes are at. The test we're doing is more of an epigenetic display of what's actually happening with those genes. So if we're looking at, for example, the catechol estrogens, we're looking at 2-4-hydroxy. We're able to see how well the methylation pathways are actually working and whether or not they're working at all. So, if you have a lot of 4-hydroxyestrogen and you don't methylate it very well, that's problematic. So you need to figure out what you're going to do about that.
So this whole story of estrogens is so much more complicated. There isn't a hormone called estrogen. And not only are we looking at, estriol, estradiol, estrone, but then we're looking at the metabolized form. So this is why your test is giving us really specific information. And, of course, it's knowing how to interpret that, which is the role of practitioners and your lab as well. So let's move on, because I also want people to understand the role of iodine in breast health. So can you elaborate a little bit about that?
Oh, I can elaborate a lot about that. we developed iodine because it's traditionally been used as a topical for treating fibrocystic breasts and things like that. And it's also, iodine is, the component in thyroid hormone. T4 is four molecules of iodine attached to it, to an amino acid, tyrosine. So, and that's how it's made in the thyroid gland. So iodine is really critical. But if you go back from an evolutionary perspective, it goes way back to iodine allowed us, or allowed the species to actually deal with oxygen. So iodine was the first antioxidant 5 billion years ago. So the blue-green algae that was forming in the earth at that time required iodine in the ocean in order to prevent the oxygen that was present there from causing damage. So iodine's first role in all living species that were in the ocean was to serve as an antioxidant. And then as we moved out of the ocean, so for those who don't want to believe this, then you can tune out. But as we moved out of the ocean and became land-bearing animals, we began to use iodine for other purposes, but probably the first purpose was T4 served as a reservoir for actually releasing iodine into the body. And a lot of people don't realize that T4, when it is produced by the thyroid gland and it's released into the body, it creates energy. There's a thyroid receptor and so on and so forth, but the iodine itself plays an important role. That iodine, you clip an iodine off of T4 and you make T3 out of it. That iodine plays an important role as an antioxidant. So it's the same role that it had a billion years ago, or 5 billion years ago, or three, or however many it was. It's a very good antioxidant. And the other really good antioxidant is selenium. And selenium hooks up into about 24 different enzymes in the body, glutathione peroxidase, many different enzymes. All of the thyroid deiodinases, that is those enzymes that convert T4 into T3 or T4 into reverse T3, are selenium-dependent enzymes. So selenium and iodine have a very close relationship. And if you eat algae, you're eating a lot of iodine and you're eating a lot of selenium. And so those are two really critical, important elements. And as I said, those women from China that that had breast cancer had extremely low levels of selenium. But the problem with iodine and selenium is both of them bind tenaciously to toxic metals like mercury and like arsenic and cadmium. And so those toxic metals will pretty much pull those essential elements out of the formula, and so you're going to have more oxidation reactions. So those estrogens, they get oxidized more. So aside from everybody knows about iodine necessary to form thyroid hormone, but iodine and the breast tissue, we think of iodide, you take iodine, it's forming an I negative charge, and that's what's taken up by the thyroid gland. But that's not the same as the iodine that, for example, is in Lugol's, which goes back many, many centuries. It's a form of iodine. It's an I2 molecule that reacts with prostaglandins and forms certain kinds of iodolipids that are growth inhibitory to cancers. So iodine really plays an important role. And people who have low levels of iodine or even low levels of thyroid are gonna have problems of iodine deficiency within the reproductive tissues. Iodine helps to lower the estrogen burden. Iodine helps to actually lower the levels of estrogen receptor. And melatonin does the same thing, just getting off track there just for a second. But iodine plays a really important role in breast health, as well as health of the uterine lining.
And the thyroid is the major gland that takes up the most iodine, but then it's the breast tissue after that that has
breast tissue is takes up enormous amounts. And when you are pregnant and you are lactating, you give birth and you start lactating, there's a huge amount of iodine that's required by the baby, because the milk contains quite high levels of iodine, because that's necessary for brain development in the infant. So the body is really using up the iodine real fast. And you know, they've done studies and they've shown in areas where there are iodine deficiencies in the world, the IQ of the children can be anywhere from 10 to 20 points lower. Iodine is critical. It's essential for brain development. But the problem is that everybody thinks that something is, if it's good for you at one dose, then let's up it tenfold and it'll be even better. And that's not true, because you can get too much iodine. And sometimes women who are taking excessive levels of iodine, particularly if they're pregnant, their babies are going to be born with goiters, because too much iodine can shut down the synthesis of thyroid hormones. So you're really compromising the baby's intelligence by either having too little or too much iodine. So that's a test we developed in urine. So we can pretty much tell if they're getting enough or too much.
So the best test to look at those levels of iodine, to look at, which is a major component of your thyroid and thyroid optimal thyroid function, you do a comprehensive thyroid assessment, is all part of the information we need for our optimal health, and particularly in either creating healthy breasts or helping to heal breast cancer. So that's all. So you can get that in one of the testing you do. That's a really comprehensive profile there.
Yeah, we do. We do not only a urine test for the elements, iodine being included there, but we also do a finger stick blood, where we can look at TSH, we can look at free T4, total T4, free T3, thyroglobulin,
and what we
see in individuals that are getting often see in people who are getting too much iodine is their TSH shoots up, their total T4 goes down. So it's very characteristic. That means that the mother, as well as the baby, it's happening to the baby in utero too, is they're not getting adequate levels of iodine for the brain growth of the brain. So it can create a big problem.
Okay, let's go over to the saliva testing. And this is an area that women need a lot of education about, and that's the difference between blood serum testing when you go to your doctors and they're taking your hormones, testing your hormones, and they're going to do a blood test. And there are some flaws with that test, particularly if you're wanting to assess your hormones to see if you are needing hormones of some sort. You want to get an accurate way to assess what your real levels are so you get the best treatment, the best, either hormones of some sort or if you need them at all. So can you help us understand why you have developed saliva testing and why that is a test that is much more accurate than doing blood serum testing to assess?
Yeah, the reason I originally developed it was because I was interested in what the hormone profiles were in breast cancer patients. Were they different from, you know, the normal average population? I was able to find that, yes, that's true. There were a lot of other people that, you know, once I developed these tests, and I didn't do it for commercial reasons. I did it for academic reasons, and then everybody wanted to have a saliva test because it was really useful. And John Lee was partly responsible for that. You know, he was out lecturing. He said, well, if you want to get a saliva test, you can talk to the doctor's office. So one thing led to another, and I ended up not only having, you know, running a breast being lab director of a breast cancer testing lab, but also a lab director of a hormone testing lab. So one thing led to another. And the reason that I particularly like saliva testing is because the hormones that are present in saliva are the bioavailable fraction. You have, you know, hormones that are released from the glands, the ovaries, the testes, the fat tissue, whatever, to get in the bloodstream. And let's say there's 100 molecules of estradiol floating around in the bloodstream. Only about 2 out of 100 of those are actually going to be able to make it into tissue that's going to be bioavailable. That's considered the bioavailable fraction. So, and that's what you really want, because you might have more or less binding proteins in the serum that are holding the estrogen there. When you take birth control pills, for example, it really holds the estrogen because your liver starts to make binding proteins and it really holds on to them. So you don't have much, you have much, much less bioavailable fraction of estrogen. So we can look at the bioavailable fraction. That's how much is moving into tissue, what we see in saliva, because what happens is the blood flows through the salivary glands, and then it's just a passive diffusion. However much is being released out of the bloodstream into the salivary gland itself, and then that moves freely, it's passive diffusion, into saliva. So we just take we just have people spit, and that tells us how much of the bioavailable fraction. So it's going to be more accurate because it tells you how much is moving into tissue. And then we collect symptoms on people. We collect lots of information. I'm kind of like a pack rat, and I'm a scientist. So I've collected lots of information, and we've gone back and looked at, you know, we've tested 2 million people. And we've gone back and looked at, okay, what are the symptoms in these people in relationship to their hormone levels? And they just really haven't done that in blood. And what we see is that, you know, there's a kind of a threshold level that where we see that when the estrogen drops below this threshold level, we start seeing a lot of symptoms. We see hot flashes and night sweats, vaginal dryness, sleep disturbances, et cetera, et cetera. Those are things that are known to be associated with moving into menopause when your estrogens drop. So we can see that. We can see when the estrogens are higher than they're supposed to be. You know, there's too much there. That is going to be a risk factor for breast cancer as well as uterine cancer. So, you know, we look at estradiol, we look at progesterone, we look at testosterone, we look at DHEA, we look at cortisol, and we look at cortisol 4 times throughout the day, just like we do in the urine, to determine whether or not a person has a nice diurnal pattern. They should have, first thing in the morning should be their high level, and that should be dropping throughout the day to a low level at night before you go to bed, not completely gone, but 10 times lower level, and that's what we expect to see. If we don't see that pattern, we often see that individual is indicating stress is problematic for them. They might put, you know, 3 out of 3 for meaning they're really stressed about whatever it is in their life. You know, they have anxiety. They have sleep disturbances. So those are the things that we see. What's different, I think, about our test, and you've seen results, is that I built an artificial intelligence around all of that information. So basically, we can push a button, and the computer gets a hold of all the information and gets a hold of the age of the patient, the gender, the menopausal status, all the symptoms, all the hormones they're using, and it goes to estradiol, and it looks at all that, and it makes comments. For example, if we see a low estradiol, and the patient has indicated they've had breast cancer, then it will make a comment that your estradiol is low. That's expected for a postmenopausal woman, particularly one who's had chemotherapy. You know, estrogen therapy may be contraindicated. Talk with your doctor about it. You're not going to get that anywhere else. Not anywhere else. And we can generate, because it's all now computerized through an artificial intelligence, we can generate 100 reports like that, 2-page report that's individualized for the person that's sending the results in. We can generate 100 reports in 60 seconds. And each one of those reports is separate and different and unique to that individual. And that took me about 8 years to figure out how to put all that stuff together. But it is quite unique in terms of saliva testing.
So when we talk about having these tests available, obviously through your lab, zrtlabs.com. First of all, do you send those tests around the world? Can people order them anywhere, any country?
We do.
Okay. So the other thing is that women or men can order it on their own. They can, you know, go directly to the lab. But I always recommend, and I'd like your thoughts, that, you know, you work with a practitioner because you get a lot of this information.
Oh, yeah.
They're just
a piece
of the puzzle.
Yeah, you need somebody to work with and help you interpret, you know, the results. We have a really good explanation, but, you know, you're kind of stuck with, okay, well, my estrogen is low or my progesterone is low. I need some, so I'm going to have to talk to somebody who could write me a script for it and can work with me, can, you know, advise me on other aspects of my health, can talk to me about sources of, let's say your estrogen is high, you know, how, you know, what kind of program do you want to get on for weight reduction or exercise or nutritional supplements that you might want to take and how much you might want to take of these things. We don't go there. We can't go there. We're not practicing medicine.
Yeah.
We can tell you, look, your hormones are off. And your hormones being off is closely associated with what you're complaining about, what your symptoms are. And you need to go work with a healthcare provider that can help you get back to normal. And you know, it's like, okay, this is the explanation for why you feel so bad.
Yeah.
It's part of, it's not going to be 100% of the explanation, but it's a large part of why you're not doing well.
So your work has just been so amazing, Dr. Zava, and I am just very grateful and I want to thank you for the dedication you have to create these amazing tests that really give us profound insight. And I also want to encourage people to pick up the book that you co-authored, which I think is a really, really powerful book called What Your Doctor May Not Tell You About Breast Cancer. A wealth of information, and also everyone listening should visit your lab at your website, ZRT Lab.
Yeah,
visit your website. Not necessarily your lab, ZRT.
Yeah, we'd love to have you come by, but
right. So
not everybody.
So we're looking. We're going to be talking about ZRT Lab. ZRTLab.com.
Yep, singular.
Okay, ZRT Lab, because you have full explanation, a lot of great educational material there. So. Dr. Zava, thank you so much for being with us today. You are
I appreciate your taking the time to interview me. So I enjoyed it. And, hey, I'm doing this because I like it. I'm a scientist, and, you know, I'm having fun with it, and I feel like we're helping people. So it makes me feel good about that. So
Well, I think we all get your passion for what you're doing, and we all are very grateful.
Well, thank you.
Okay, thank you. And to all of you listening, thank you for joining me. Remember, this is Breast Health Awareness Month. Go to whatwomenmustknow.com, opt in there, so you'll get the ongoing breast health awareness tips, and also my Facebook page for more tips. This is a month when we can really step into our power, get the knowledge that will keep us on the track of good health and well-being. So until next time and another enlightening conversation about breast health awareness strategies, this is Dr. Cheryl Sulman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.